All right, so do you have a bunch of VHS tapes or film reels or whatever sitting around in your closet in a garage somewhere and you're wondering what to do with them? Well, we're going to talk about that in this episode. And for you church leaders out there, we're going to talk about the best resource that I know of that can really improve your live stream. And we're going to ask and try to possibly answer at least part of this question, which is, of course, is Facebook failing? We'll talk about that as well as more on this episode of the Must Increase Podcast. Welcome to the Must Increase Podcast, where our mission is to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of your church, your business, your family, and beyond. I'm your host, Luke Clayton, and I want to thank you for joining me for this episode. Also, thank you for subscribing on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We appreciate you being with us each week for our latest episodes. Well, I'm going to dive right in with stuff we like, or stuff I like in this case. And I wanted to show you just a piece of a really awesome video that I stumbled across on social media that the Chicago Cubs put out. So we've come to the end of baseball season, the regular season that is. And so for the final home game, I believe it was, the Chicago Cubs put out this really awesome drone shot. It was just this one continuous drone shot. Really good cinematography. I really nerded out on it. And so I'm going to show you some of it right now. Let's see if I can get this on my screen. You're not going to hear any of the audio, and I'm not going to show you the full clip, but I did want to just kind of show you a sample of what they did here. It's so cool. I mean, as we're opening up, for those of you that are listeners, you need to check it out. I'll have the link to the video in the show notes, but it's this really cool opening kind of aerial shot of Chicago coming down to kind of like a little bar and grill that they've got nearby the stadium. I'm sure if you're from Chicago or familiar with it, you probably know what it's called. I didn't catch the name. They're flying out now back onto one of the streets here beside the stadium. And I don't know, it's just a really impressive. If you're listening audio only, it doesn't do it justice. But if you're watching this kind of sample clip, it only gets better from here. And, you know, if you're not a big, you know, guy into all the, like I am, into all the filmmaking and cinematography, you may not appreciate it as much. But I have a feeling that doesn't matter who you are going to be impressed with this video. And so I'm going to kind of stop the sample clip there. And then if you want to watch the rest of the video, again, be sure to check out the link in the description of this episode, and you can watch the full video. It's about 4 minutes long. It's really cool. But yeah, it's really random. I usually try to provide you with something more helpful or inspirational, but hey, that's pretty cool. So I wanted to share that in stuff we like. All right, now let's move on to some questions and answers. And remember, you can text your questions to 615-900-4461. That's 615-900-4461. And if you text your questions, we may just get around to answering them here right on a future episode. And so here's a question I got recently. And it's, the question is this: what is the best way to convert VHS or even film into DVD or digital? Well, for most of you out there, if you've still got film media, it's most likely in the form of VHS or maybe an old cassette tape, but I'm talking about video here, VHS. And look, I remember growing up, I was born in the 90s, so VHS was still very much a thing, and we had a bunch of VHS tapes that were not only, you know, things that we'd bought of, like, you know, professionally produced movies, which, by the way, if you're looking to do so, I referred to this in a previous episode, if you're looking to replace, you know, your old Disney collection of VHS, well, that is where a Disney Plus subscription comes in clutch. But if you're actually looking to convert those home videos, and that's where my family was, we had tons of home videos that we had, you know, that documented. I'm the oldest of four kids, so it kind of documented our lives, and they'd just been sitting around in, you know, just storage for the longest time. And so my siblings and I got together, and we decided to do something about that 1 year as a Christmas gift to our parents. But in terms of, you know, what you can do, I'm going to talk about a couple options, but then also give you what I believe the best option, kind of save that for last as I answer this question. So I'm going to pull up my screen again, and I'm going to show you just some options you have in terms of, let's see if I can get this to come up again. There we go. Yeah, so this is something on Amazon that you can buy. It's a little just kind of all-in-one digital converter. And you'll notice here, if you look at the images you're watching on Amazon here, or if you're watching on video rather, if you're not, I'll do my best to subscribe or to describe, which, speaking of which, you should subscribe to the YouTube channel so that you can always see the latest episode, especially when we have these episodes that have visual content. But if you kind of scroll through the pictures, you can see there's the, you know, those old school yellow, red, white inputs that, you know, work with. That's how the VHS outputs to the VCR rather outputs to the television, how it did rather output to the television. I'm struggling talking at the moment, but and then there's also S video in and things like that. And then there's an HDMI output. So this is a pretty intuitive little device for doing that. But and this would be a dedicated device for doing this. And from what I gather, this is about all you can do with it. But you can, you know, get your the idea here is that you plug your VHS into this device, you play the videos, and this captures it and saves it. As you can see here, there's an SD card slot, so it saves it right there onto the SD card. So now you have a digital copy of it. But you can see the price on this. That's about $160 for this little kit, which again, I guess it's not that bad. I don't know. I've never personally used it. I just went based off the fact that it's got, you know, pretty good ratings and reviews here on Amazon. But there's many other devices out there. I'm sure you could scroll down here to related products and yes, see other things like it. But the idea here is that this device kind of handles it all. You just plug in the VCR and then record it from there. Now, if you go over here to the this one is much more affordable, but this is going to require that you have a computer that could process and capture this content. So what this is, it's the same thing. It's these you know, these yellow, white, red cable inputs and also an S video that it accepts, and then on the other end it's just USB. So the idea here is that you take the USB side and you plug it into your computer. You'd have to have some sort of and maybe they have some recommended, it looks like they do have some type of CD that maybe includes the software that you're going to need to download on this. And this is saying that it's compatible with Windows. It does not say anything. Does it say anything here about it being compatible with Mac? But it wouldn't surprise me if it is. Either way, again, I have not used this. I'm just going based off of this is recommended by Amazon, and it's got pretty good reviews and ratings. But anyways, the idea here, either way, again, of whether you got this one or something like it, is that, yeah, you plug your VCR into this side, you plug the USB into your computer, you get some type of software that can capture the video and audio from the VCR, and then you play it from your VCR, and then now your computer captures that digital file. Much more affordable in terms of the tool as far as, you know, how much it costs. But again, you're going to have to make sure you've got a computer that's compatible with it and also going to work be able to process and handle. I mean, when it comes to capturing video, you have to have a pretty, you may require, depending on how long you're going to be using it and whatever, your computer is probably going to require a little bit of performance power. And so that is another option as well. But I do have to say this, while those options I'm sure are fine, and you know, even if you had all the right equipment, the right computer, all of that stuff, what you probably don't have is the patience to actually you know, sit and wait for the videos off VHS to play and get captured. Because that is something that you have to remember when it comes to dealing with film-based media. The only way, like a VHS, the only way to convert that to digital is to, in real time, play that content and allow a digital device to capture it. So again, whether that's a device that's all-in-one like we looked at first, or a device that connects your computer with your VHS, that is something that's going to, you're going to have to, it's going to take time. I remember when I was a teenager, my parents first had this idea of converting all of our VHS to DVD. Because back then, kind of when I was a teenager, DVDs were the new thing. VHS was done with. But again, still most of our memories and stuff were recorded by way of VHS. And so they assigned me with the task of trying to convert all of the VHS videos to DVD. And so they bought these are still out there, I'm sure. They bought an all-in-one VHS and DVD player, but it also could record from VHS to DVD. And so you put the VHS in, and then you put the blank DVD in, and then you hit the record button, you played the VHS, and it copied over DVD. I started that project, and I'm not going to lie, I didn't get very far. Because what I did not have, even as a young teenager who, in all reality, probably did have the time, I just didn't think I had the time at that time, was the fact that, yes, it took time. You had to, in real time, watch and monitor and make sure everything played. And I remember a couple times starting to play the video and then going back to see, and it's like, oh, something happened and the video paused for some reason, or the DVD recording failed, and it just became something. And I think I got 3 or 4, VHS converted to DVD, and I just gave up. And so a few years later, or several years later, probably 10 plus years later, my siblings and I got together, and we had the idea. We said, well, we still have all of these old VHS tapes with all of our memories. And here's the thing. The truth is that the other thing about film media or physical media in general is that it degrades very, very quickly, much quicker than you might be thinking. In fact, if you haven't stored your VHS properly, then there's a good chance that some of them, depending on how long they've been in storage, are already at least suffered some quality loss, if not have already been degraded altogether. And so we said, well, we got to do something about this. The VHS luckily had all been stored in decent storage, as far as it was, it's still in the house, not like in the attic or down in the basement. So it's like climate controlled and whatever. And so we were able to get all of those together, and we just decided, you know what, we are not going to sit here. None of us have the time to sit here and do this ourselves. And so we decided to enroll the help of Legacy Box. Now, I get no endorsement for this. I wish I did, because it really is a wonderful service. But we enrolled Legacy Box. And I'm going to show you the website here. This is how you digitize your home movies and photos, as they say here. And you just pick a package. Here, I'm going to go to the pricing page, and you can see how that works. So you can do 2 items, 10 items, 20, 40, and you pick a package, and then they send you a box. You put all your videos and stuff that you want converted in that box, and then they take that and they convert that to a digital file, and then they mail the videos back to you, so you still have the originals, and then they email and send you the actual digital files that they've converted. And so here's the thing. You say, well, this is really expensive. Okay, yeah, look, I mean, regular price on 40 items is over $1,100. They're giving a discount, and they do, or they're always running discounts and stuff. But like right now, you can save 50% off. But even so, that's $630 for 40 items. Even for 20 items, it's $320, and that can feel like a lot, like a big chunk of change, maybe. But you have to consider. Let's say you went with a 20 item. Let's say you got 20 VHS that you want converted. Well, let's just think about it. If each one of those VHS, on average, represents 1 hour, do you have 20 hours to sit around and use a tool like this USB converter or this all-in-one digital thing? Do you really have the time to do that? And the answer is most likely no. And so that's why I recommend something like Legacy Box. There's other services out there, I'm sure. Well, I know there are. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but they're out there that, again, they take it, you send it to them, they take the time, and it does. You have to keep the turnaround times in mind. I mean, it takes several weeks depending on how many items you send in, because, again, in real time, they're playing and recording and taking care of all this as far as getting it converted over. But you have to ask yourself that, like, do you have the time? Probably not. So that's why I would just use something like Legacy Box, get it all done. We did it. We were glad we did. And we did it kind of just in time, because I'm not going to lie, there were some of those VHS tapes that were already starting to suffer a little bit of quality loss. And that was unfortunately reflected even in the digital file. There's no way to correct that. But we could at least preserve the vast majority of our memories and be able to have those now digitally. Because that's the thing about a digital file. It never corrupts. It's always there. You can take that and you can, you know, get a nice backup, back it up to the cloud, like a Dropbox or Google Drive. And, you know, then it's kind of like you always have it forever. And so if you're looking to do this, now look, if you have just like one, you got to weigh your cost analysis here. You got to weigh all that. So for example, if you have, just like one video you're wanting to convert over, well, maybe, and you've got a half decent computer, well, maybe, yeah, go ahead and pick up one of these USB converter kits for, you know, $13, $14 on Amazon. Maybe that is worth it to you. But to me, I'm either saying I'm going to go with this little $13 thing and maybe just give it a shot. But if I've got much more than, I don't know, honestly, for me, if I had much more than two or three that I'm looking to convert over, I'm just going to hit up Legacy Box or a service like it and let them do it for me. Because not only are they going to do it for you, they're going to make sure it's done right, to the best of quality that they can extract from those VHS tapes. And they also do other things like film reels. They can do, I believe they even do like photos. So like hard photos, hard copies of photos. If you send them in, they can digitize them. And so anyway, a really good service. I used it in the past and I was really pleased with it there. And so that's my recommendation. Again, if you are looking to convert this VHS rather tape film media over to digital compatible files. So here's another question, and this one is more for you church leaders and pastors out there. I get questions about this all the time. It's about live stream. Now, if you've been with our podcast for any length of time, you know that I have a very probably unpopular opinion about church live stream. And I'm not going to revisit that right now. I do have an entire video series I did on that on our YouTube channel that you can go check out if you want. However, it doesn't change the fact, even though I have a very, again, unique, unpopular perspective on how churches should be handling their church online experience, that live stream is something that most churches are trying to do to some extent. And so I do get the question about, well, what do we do with our live stream? How do we make it, you know, better or ideal? And here's the complication we always run into with live stream is churches want a live stream, but they can't afford to do it, if you will, the best or the right way. Because if you want to do it the best or the right way, you've got to, you know, buy very high-end equipment, spend a lot of money on cameras and lighting and switchers and all this infrastructure, honestly. And so I'm not going to talk about that, because that in and of itself is just a whole deep, I mean, you really, there's so many different varieties of all that different types of equipment and gear I just mentioned. But there is one very important component of live stream that often hinders, or actually there's two that often gets overlooked. So here's the thing. You can buy the best of the best in terms of equipment. You can buy, you know, you could spend tens of thousands of dollars, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars on your setup, on your cameras, on those switchers, on all of those things. And you can still have bad broadcast live quality if you don't get two things figured out. The first is bandwidth. You've got to have a high level of bandwidth to do live stream, because what you're doing is you're trying to send a high definition, maybe even 4K video. You're trying to send that in virtually real time to the internet so that others can download it. That requires a lot of bandwidth. And so I see churches trying to do this and it's like, well, what type of bandwidth are you working with? And they've got like 20 meg download packages and you know, that's only got like 10 to 12 upload. And for those of you that are like, well, this is really technical, I'll just tell you this, that's really slow. That's not going to work. And so your first issue that you're going to want to look into, if you really want to do live stream and do it right, you've got to make sure that you've got good bandwidth. As far as specifics, I would say if you don't have at least 50 upload, you're going to struggle. Now, maybe there's more techie people out there that know more about this than me that could give me a more specific number, but that's what I've seen. You've got to have really strong upload speeds, though. Otherwise, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter all this other stuff that you could buy. It's not going to work. So don't forget about that. Now, that's obviously something you're going to work with on your, with your, internet provider to try to figure out. So, and depending on where you're at, what part of the country, what part of the world you're in, there's different internet providers. And so there's not some, cookie cutter solution I can give to that other than talk to your internet provider and see what you can do as far as getting the adequate speeds. Now, when it comes to the other side, so again, there's kind of the internet side, the connectivity side with the bandwidth there. Then there's all of the gear, the cameras that are bringing that feed to the internet. There's a very important component that bridges the two between getting your actual video and audio content sent to the internet. There's a very important component right there in the middle that often, again, gets overlooked or just kind of forgotten, and that is the encoding process. So again, without getting too technical, the encoding process is basically what takes your video and audio and formats it to be friendly and to play nice, if you will, with the internet and all of the different devices that are going to be watching it. It's, again, it's a very technical thing that happens. Now, some switchers out there claim that they do this on, like, as part of it. Like, for example, Blackmagic makes several different, or they make the AT or the ATEM, ATEM. I can never remember which way. Are you supposed to say the letters or pronounce it as is? Whatever. It's that one. But they make switchers like that, and they also claim to do the encoding. But here's the problem: Blackmagic in this case is really good at making switchers, and the switchers are great at switching. They're not so great at encoding. And so I was having a conversation actually recently with someone who was saying, hey, look, we have this Blackmagic thing and it's doing the switching and encoding and it's just dropping the ball. And we've got good bandwidth. What's going on? Well, the problem is that Blackmagic in this case was not doing a sufficient job when it came to the encoding. And that's oftentimes the case. In fact, when it comes to the encoding, you want to make sure you've got a dedicated device. So you want to make sure that you've either got a good computer that uses some type that's got some type of performance power to it, so that uses some type of software to do the encoding. So, for example, OBS is an open source free software that you can download that does the capturing. It can do the switching. It can also do the encoding. I use OBS actually to produce these episodes, but I'd never use the actual live feature. I never live stream. I just record. So I couldn't speak to how well it does with live stream. But in my experience, these softwares, again, might be great for capturing and doing a recording and maybe even doing, again, some switching. That's how I do all my switching in between my, screens and things like that. But in my experience, I've used other ones similar to OBS. I've used Wirecast as well in the past, and I've tried to get it to do the encoding, and it does not do well with the encoding because not only are now, again, these softwares are often built just like the hardware of the switchers, they are built in such a way to where they actually are, are somewhat limited, if you will, by the software itself and many times by the hardware it's running on. So for example, if I have OBS and I'm running it on a Mac computer that only has 8 gigs of RAM and maybe is still on an Intel chip, encoding-wise, it is going to struggle. Now, if I'm running it on a computer like I have now, which is a MacBook Pro with the M1 Max, so like the latest high-end power, well, I guess now it's technically been dethroned, but one of the highest ends in terms of power and performance and processing that's out there as far as the chip and the processor, but then it's also got 64 gigs of RAM. Well, yeah, this device in and of itself, this computer is going to do an excellent job encoding if you've got the right software. Either way, you've got to have that right software and right hardware, and that can get very, very expensive. If you're going to buy an encoder like this one, if you're going to buy a computer rather to be your encoding device like the one I have here, that you're talking thousands of dollars. And so for you to say, I'm going to do the encoding on a computer, well, to get one that is beefy enough, that I can tell you this, you're probably not going to get away without spending any less than $2,000. So, well, that kind of makes the encoding question of, if I really want to encode this content so that it can be live streamed efficiently and effectively, how can I do that affordably? Well, that is where one of the most incredible live streaming tools I've ever seen is Boxcast.com. Boxcast is really, the name describes what it is. It is a little box that handles all of the live stream and broadcasting. And so you take this tiny little box, On one side, you have an HDMI. I believe they might have versions that have SDI input as well, that basically feeds out of your switcher, your camera, however your setup is on this end. It feeds into that. Then on the other side, there is an Ethernet port where you plug in to a hardwire into the internet. I believe you can connect it wirelessly, but that's not advised. It's always better to use a hardwire connection. Again, that goes back to bandwidth and upload speeds and all of that. But it's this tiny little box. I mean, literally, it's probably, I don't know, it's smaller than like an iPhone. I mean, really, it's tiny. But that little box handles all of the encoding and then gets it ready for uploading. And it's very affordable. Boxcast, I believe, cost around $100 a month, maybe less. I'm going to actually look up the price. I didn't have that ready to go here beforehand, but I'm going to go ahead and pull it up right now and go ahead and just show you my screen while I'm at it. So yeah, you can see you can get started for $100. And there's other plans that give you different features and things like that. But look, for $100 a month, this is a really good deal. And again, the box, I believe, is included in the price. When you sign up, they send you that little box. And like I said, you plug your camera feed in, you plug your Ethernet in, and then everything is done through an online portal there on Boxcast. You get like a login, and they connect your Boxcast little box with your account, and that's how you control everything. And then once you're in that software, you can do a lot of stuff too. You can schedule when you want your different live streams to start. Once the file, it's not only broadcasting it out to all your platforms like YouTube and Facebook, but it's also doing an actual live broadcast. The platform Boxcast is live streaming it in of itself, and that you can embed the actual bot. They give you an embed code that you can like put on your website or something that you can use to watch directly on Boxcast. And then it's also capturing that live feed in the Boxcast cloud platform. So afterwards, you have recordings of your live content as well. And then you can take that, and now you can download it. And you can download it, you know, the file, you can clip it up into different clips and then export those clips to YouTube or download them. It's a really, really powerful service. And so I highly recommend, if you're doing live stream, you need to have something like Boxcast, not because there's other live stream platforms out there. There's livestream.com and I'm slipping my mind. Another one I was just working with, Restream, I believe is what it's called. And these platforms are fine for live stream. But again, what they're handling is basically just, okay, once you've encoded it and it's online, now we'll take it from there, which isn't important. The distribution aspect, you really pretty much have to have an effective live stream platform to do that. But to do that in the best way. But the encoding aspect is something that Boxcast handles for you as well. So it's handling all that online distribution and making sure it gets out there to all the different places online, but it's also doing the encoding. And that is a really powerful tool. So that is what I would recommend for live stream as far as at your church. So here is the final question. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm looking at my time. I'm probably going to continue this thought in the next episode, but I wanted to at least introduce it. And that's this. What is the future of social media? And with that in mind, is something like Facebook, could it truly fail? Well, the long form answer, again, I'm going to just go ahead and wait and go ahead and do that in another episode just for sake of time. But the short form answer is yes, anything can fail. And Facebook actually does have some indications that they may actually be on the decline. There's a really interesting article. I'm going to go ahead and include it in the show notes and description of this episode, so you can go ahead and read ahead if you want. But I want to dive into that in the next episode and also talk about what we can do in terms of alternatives to if we lose social media, then what happens? What happens from a marketing perspective for you churches and businesses out there? Well, obviously, you're probably reaching people using social media and finding new potential, you know, customers for businesses or like I said, finding potential church members even and churchgoers for you churches out there. So we'll talk about how to handle it from a marketing perspective, but we're also going to look at, well, what do we do about that from the perspective of the consumer. So you say, I use social media to keep in touch with people. Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit 2. Until that episode, though, remember, you can text your questions to 615-900-4461. That's 615-900-4461. Also, we'd love it if you subscribe on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening to podcasts. And hey, maybe you can share this with someone else. You know, I always like to remind you, pastors out there, this content will help other pastors and other church leaders, but it will also help the people of your church, because what we're trying to do is help people navigate this crazy media-driven culture we live in so that we can learn ultimately how to use the power of media for good. Remember, you can always connect with us online at mustincrease.com. Since I was pretty targeted to church leaders, don't forget we offer all of our services to churches through our Church Media HQ platform, which is found at churchmediahq.com. And I want to thank you so much again for joining us for this episode, and I look forward to seeing you next time as we continue to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of others, right here on the Must Increase podcast.